The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. As we head into Hour 5, we are delighted to do so as we are every Monday, almost every Monday, with Brandon Weikert. He is the author of Winning Space, How America Remains a Superpower. He's the author of The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy. He is the author of Biohacked, China's Race to Control Life. If there's something hot, he's writing about it, and always smartly, as we often say around here. If you want to know the news in 6 months, read Brandon Weikert. Today, he's also now with 1945.com, 1945.com, where he is helping them revive that publication, which is just really smart stuff. Brandon, welcome back to the show, sir.
Oh, thank you, sir, for all the kind words, and it's a pleasure to be here on this fine day.
That sounded overly scripted. You actually mean that.
I actually mean that.
Sorry to give
you. I'm embarrassed to say, I was trying to think of something wittier to say.
No, that's all right. Sometimes the sentences just end themselves. That's okay. That's all right. In 6 months, you'll equally be happy with us.
Yeah.
Well, Donald Trump is much in the news. This is kind of an interesting thing about Donald Trump. Even when he doesn't want to be in the news, he is in the news. The media can't get it. You know, I think it's fair to say he understood the use of media and he understood the use of publicity early on before many. I mean, going back to the 70s, he understood how to do press conferences about potential projects.
Mm-hmm.
He understood how to work the press. And he created, a sort of maybe a bit of a dragon that he created, and then it became a symbiotic relationship where they used each other, and now maybe they're turning on him. They have been ever since they realized he actually means it. He actually is going to run for president. He actually is running for president. He actually won the presidency. He actually means it. They turn on him. It's a lesson about the press, by the way. It's a lesson people like John McCain never learned. They, no matter what, they will hate a Republican, no matter what, until they're dead or out of power, except for Donald Trump, who's out of power and not anyway. So he is he's probably going to, I guess, hard to say, he's probably going to be facing the district attorney in Manhattan this week. He seems to be saying he is. And you think in your headline, you do a big think piece, could Trump getting indicted spark a civil war? Walk us through your thoughts on this.
Yeah. So basically, real quick about the John McCain thing, too.
Yeah.
I remember I worked the campaign in 08, and I remember distinctly him wailing to Steve Schmidt and those guys about, why does MSNBC like me anymore?
Right. They used to eat my cheeseburgers. Right. I remember.
Yeah, exactly. And that pretty much sealed the deal for me when I knew he was never going to win. Trump is different. You know, Trump is not made by the media. It was, as you said, it was much more of a mutual relationship throughout the last 30 years where they helped him and he helped them with ratings. They love to hate him. But now we are reaching a crescendo where that mutual relationship is no longer acceptable anymore for the mainstream media, because if I were running one of these networks, I would put a camera on him 24/7 and basically let him do his thing, because I know I'd have higher than normal.
Oh yeah, you'd have eyeballs. Yeah,
you know. Yeah. But you know, in typical fashion, the mainstream news media is not first and foremost a business. It is an ideological enterprise. And
that's
so
right. They're happy to be a lost leader on their major corporations. They really are.
Look at CNN.
Yeah.
They've been in the red for years and they don't care.
Yeah.
Really, the last time they ever had any real ratings was, in fact, when Trump was running in 2016. And they basically just pointed the camera at him. So there's that. So the reason that these companies, these multi-billion-dollar news companies, are willing to just basically exist in the red in more ways than one, is because of this ideological component. And my concern is that between the media And the Democratic Party, Joe Biden in particular, they're so gung-ho about getting that picture, that, you know, picture which is worth a million words, of Trump in handcuffs being escorted into a courthouse in Manhattan, that they don't seem to realize that it's an opposite and yet equal reaction. Trump is a force of political nature in our country. And so, you know, yes, you put Trump on TV and you let him rip and you, you know, let him talk about Mexicans, you know, being rapists and they're not sending us their best. And that's going to gin up his base. And he loves that because he knows he can always walk away with a very strong showing of support. But the media and Biden and the Democrats want that as well on some level, because they know that that will equally galvanize their followers. So now they're thinking, Biden's weak. He's probably right now going to be the nominee. How do we coax enough of that vote out in 2024 if Trump is the nominee, to ensure that, A, Trump is the nominee, because I think the Democrats think they can much easier beat him than DeSantis.
We'll come back to that. I think you're right, but we'll come back. That's worth thinking on. Yeah, go on.
Yeah. And B, you know, if Trump is the nominee, you know, there's a real concern, because most Americans fundamentally know things are not going that great for the country under Biden. So how can the Democrats and Biden gin up enough of their crazy base, who are feeling down by Biden because he's too moderate, according to them, and how do they also cleave enough of those independent voters to come onto the Biden side of the aisle again to overcome whatever advantages Trump has with that large base of support that he consistently shows? And so by getting this, by getting that picture, they think, both Trump and Biden think for different reasons, they're going to coax their base out. Because remember, Trump leaked this information to the social media, which then got onto national media headlines.
That's right.
Trump wants this news out there for some reason.
Yeah.
And I think it's more than just self-preservation. I think it's also because he wants to get his supporters out there. What did he say a couple days ago? He wants mass protests like January 6th. Oh, my gosh. And so I think where that's leading us to is not just an incident again with rioting and whatnot, and not just galvanizing the two bases of the party, but very easily could lead to an actual civil war, which I fear we've been teetering on pretty much since, you know, mid-2016-17. You know, who knows who's going to fire the first shots, but this is a very precarious point. But one last point I'd like to make about this. People forget, now I teach history, American history, so people forget, the real reason the South seceded when they did, how they did, was because the South had told, in the run-up to the Civil War, the first Civil War, the South had told the North, if you elect Abraham Lincoln, we don't care anybody else, you can elect anybody else, but if you elect Abraham Lincoln as your president, we're out of here. And they got Abraham Lincoln as president, and within, I think, 4 to 6 months after the election, fired the first shots at Fort Sumter.
Secession took place before he was inaugurated. Yeah, right, right,
right. Right, right. Okay, yeah, that's what it was. Forgive me. Yes. But when Fort Sumter happened, that was the actual breaking point that we hone in on. But what we need to hone in on is it was the election of one man, or rather the running for presidency
one
man,
that
threatened the stability.
That's right.
And that stability today is being threatened as well. And I'm not saying that I think Trump is this great enemy of the state, but I think that's how the left is looking at it. They will risk a civil war to get him, you know, in their crosshairs. And that's where we're headed.
I'm not sure, and we can come back to this too, Brandon. I'm not sure that we haven't, in fact, seen the first shots of Fort Sumter over the last few years. We just haven't seen the literal, what would you call them, the literal letters of secession, the literal bills of state formation. But I mean, when you see the kind of stuff that 1619 was about, or the BLM riots were about, or the taking over of government institutions, the firebombing of federal courthouses, I mean, there's a reason that Tom Cotton said this is an insurrection requiring the use of the Insurrection Act.
Right.
It was an insurrection. An insurrection is a war against your country. And that's, you know, it was, I guess somewhat quelled, but I think the tinderbox is dry and can be lit quite quickly. So I agree with you on all that. Let me hold that thought and come back to you on that, because it requires some time later in the hour to discuss, maybe in a segment or two. Let me talk to you about my kind of nuanced thesis of if Trump is the nominee, as I kind of had to break, you can respond on the way back if that's fair. My thinking is if Biden is the nominee, Trump is the strongest of the candidates to beat him, because it's an easy comparison. When we had Trump, we had good times. If we have Biden, we have bumbling idiocy. And yet, on the other hand, if for some reason Biden isn't the nominee, if it's someone else, something tells me someone like Ron DeSantis is probably the stronger candidate because, you know, of the exhaustion factor with Trump and kind of a different kind of candidate up against him. A little bit nuanced. I'll let you respond to that when we come back. I can flesh it out more if you want as well. I'm Seth Leibson, and he is Brandon Weikert, senior editor at 1945.com. We'll be right back. Brandon J. Weikert is my guest. He is a senior editor at 1945, author of several books, columnist with the Asia Times and other publications as well. I'm not saying other candidates couldn't beat Biden. I'm just in my thesis of nuance here, Brandon. I'm just thinking that if the Democrats are thinking, or if anyone's thinking, that Trump is the strongest of the Republican candidates or the weakest of the Republican candidates, I think he's weaker against someone else. But I think he's stronger against Joe Biden just because of the one-to-one ratio comparison. I don't know. I mean, you know, all of this is speculative. Just a thought I had on the fly. I don't know what you're thinking is.
Yeah, and I think, if it's a kind of an apples-to-apples comparison, all other things considered. But remember, Trump did lose to Biden one way or the other.
Trump has not won a popularity contest yet. Not yet.
No.
Not even in 2016.
No.
Yeah.
No, but he was able to eke enough of support out of the electorate that he was able to rejigger the electoral map and break apart that much feared blue wall that any other Republican, I would argue, would not have been able
no
to.
No question. 100% correct. I agree with you 100%.
But ever since then, it's not played out as it should have. That
right.
Sort of blue wall breakage did not replicate itself in any of the elections that have happened since that Trump has been either ancillary part of or directly a part
injecting
of.
Himself into. Right.
Yeah. And so I will tell you what my concern is right now. My concern is what we were talking about in the first part of this interview, which was that Trump is such a galvanizing, he's such a lightning rod. That, yeah, he'll generate a lot of support from particularly the right, but is it going to be enough to overcome the kind of radical hatred that's going to gin up the left? And they're going to be able to then gin up a sort of a popularity contest. And as you noted, Trump is not popular the way that other politicians are. And it might end up not becoming an issue, you know, a race about issues if it's Biden versus Trump, but a race about temperament or a race about, you know, who comes across as the stabler hand. And you know, the fact of the matter is Trump has a major disadvantage, which is that every single element of elite society, whether it's pop culture, academia, or the news media, the mainstream quote-unquote news media, they're all carrying water for Biden. I mean, we are literally in a mass recession or heading toward a mass depression. Why is it mass? Because the media is lying about it for the Biden administration. Had the economic situation that is occurring presently happened under Trump, they would have hung this around Trump's neck as soon as it began. A bank failure, like what happened with Silicon Valley Bank, what's going on with Republic Bank, what's going on with now Credit Suisse, all of these banks have failing. That alone would have been enough to end Trump's presidency. They probably would have impeached him over that. But the fact of the matter is that it's all happening under Biden, plus possible nuclear world war, plus all the chaos at home. I just was reading this morning that there was apparently 400,000 tons of radioactive heavy water that was leaked into Minnesota, northern Minnesota, from some kind of a waste facility. And all of these things under Trump, every single one of them would have destroyed his presidency. But they haven't affected Biden, not even East Palestine, and he's clearly ignoring that. And so what I'm saying here is when you take all of those sort of external factors and you combine it with the fact that there is still a level of support there's still a level of hatred for Trump among radical left-wing voters, plus a lot of moderate voters, Trump might remind during the election of next year might remind enough of those voters why they didn't want to vote for him in 2020. And although they all may think it's really bad right now under Biden for various reasons, they might prefer, as the old saw goes, not to change horses midstream, because the alternative is orange fireball, as they, you know, as they.
You might be right. You might be right. On the other hand, the counter narrative would be, right, following that thinking, the counter narrative would be is that a lot of things have proven to vindicate Donald Trump over the last couple of years, whether it had to do with COVID, whether it had to do with China, whether it had to do with who was really arming and protecting Ukraine, who Russia invaded on whose watch, right? I mean, so there's that too.
Yes, but again, you're going to have to overcome. Trump is like an allergic reaction to people now, where like at least half the country, no matter what, I mean, you could literally have the country nuclear atomized, you know, they're going to hate him no matter what.
Yeah.
And so I hear what you're saying. And look, if he's the nominee, this is what we're going to have to, that's, those are the things we're going to have to
say. One of the things Trump did that was so artful in 2015, 2016, that I think he's been less artful at since, was what they said Reagan did, which was speaking directly to the American people and going over the elite media. And I think less artful in a sense because he was removed from social media. But I think if he wants a fighting chance at that again, Brandon, he's going to have to give up Truth Social, or at least add Twitter to his Truth Social.
Yeah, he should be adding Twitter.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's contractually allowed to end Truth Social, but he should be adding Twitter. And there's actually, you could get a lot of cross current there. If he was smart, he'd probably be able to get a lot of cross support from that.
I think so.
But it's foolish that he's not tweeting because it's seriously hurting him. But again, the problem is in 2016, he didn't have a record and he was going up against a woman who was deeply unpopular.
Fair enough.
And that's not the case, sadly, with Biden, believe it or not.
Yeah. It's true that Biden's negatives will never be as high as Hillary's.
Never.
And it's eminently true. It'll be the most interesting race of our lifetime.
It might be the last free election, if you want to call it free of all time.
I don't know what to say to that except for the fact I really don't, except for the fact that the march of socialism and the march of neo-Marxist political philosophy in this country has been so aggrandizing over the last 10 years, and particularly rapidity over the last 3 years, that I give credence to this notion that we don't have another Democratic presidency in us if we're going to keep this the last best hope of earth heart beating. I don't think we do. I think if you were to give the presidency to the Democrats one more time after this, that it is going to be so far gone with critical race theory and DEI neo-Marxist thought and weaponization of departments of justice and homeland security and intelligence agencies, that, you know, it's going to be hard for conservatives, Republicans, moderates or non-Marxists to even have a fighting chance in this country.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I think Thomas Sowell talked about the tipping point. I think he was right in 2010. He said he was worried 2010 was the tipping point where there was no return. And I got to tell you, I think now we're in a slightly democratic socialist country, and I think the question is, what gradation are we going to be? Are we going to be more like Britain, or are we going to go full bore into, you know, deep socialism? You know, there's a lot of things that Trump, and I understand what he's saying. There's a lot of things that Trump stands for, though, that most Republicans don't stand for, with the entitlements. I think that we've reached a transition point. And I'm not saying it's all bad, because I think that Trump has a lot of good ideas. I think his execution is somewhat messy. But my concern is that the left, we've had three generations of this neo-Marxism, as you say. It's now kind of the default position. Just look at what they're doing to Trump. They're overinflating these charges to try to get him so they can get a picture of him.
Oh, it's totally Soviet style. It's totally.
Yeah.
Let me hit the break.
This
I'll be right back.
It never happened even a decade ago.
No, it wouldn't have. You're right. Let me hit the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Brandon J. Weikert is our guest. What they're doing to Trump, you're right, Brandon, is Soviet style. But what they're doing to ordinary conservatives or ordinary Republicans, too, you look at the you look at the kinds of weaponization against school board meetings. You look at the incursions into the First Amendment. There's this odd suffusion of thought that Republicans and conservatives whose names aren't Trump literally just have no right being on the political stage. They don't have a right teaching at our universities. They don't have a right guest lecturing at our universities. They don't have a right to show up at school board meetings. You know, if they support Republicans, they are ipso facto insurrectionary. And that's an awfully frightening thing from a party and a movement that kind of, when we were young kids, prided itself on protecting civil liberties. They wouldn't know what the word civil liberty is if it hit them in the face.
I mean, put it this way. It's so bad, the Democratic Party. You've had people like Seymour Hersh.
Yeah.
Who are now being called right-wing conspiracy theorists. That's how far gone
right.
The Democrats are. Russell Brand is now more conservative to them than anyone else they've met, which is insane.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Democratic Party has really gone off. But this is who they've always been, at least since the post-Watergate era. They've been better at hiding it because there was still that generation of voters who were never going to go that far to the left. But that generation of voters, the greatest generation, a lot of the silent generation, of which Biden is actually part of, a lot of those old-timer voters, they're gone now. And now it's all mostly baby boomers and Gen X and my generation, the millennials, and now Gen Z, who are the worst of all of them. You know, those groups are... They don't have that connection anymore to the past that the greatest generation had.
They don't have a belief in the history of the greatness of this country
or
any contextualized understanding of the history of this country. You teach American history. You know how lousy the state of knowledge about this country's history is.
I see it with freshmen, students, and it's scary because they don't. You know, how they get passed through the different school grades to get to where they end up is really shocking, and they don't. You're right. They don't hate the United States. I mean, they don't love the United States. And furthermore, you know, I was talking to a colleague of yours over the weekend who has a radio program out in Phoenix on Salem, and she asked me basically, you know, how do you get a generation of Americans to join the military and to stand up against the Chinese when most of them genuinely believe the American experience is illegitimate.
Our country
was founded on genocide and slavery. And, you know, it's not just a small fraction anymore. It's most young people today really don't like America.
No, that's right. 50% support socialism and 50% get an F in American history. We're making aliens of our own students, regardless of the illegal alien problem. We're making aliens of our own.
Right. And you can't really blame young people for not joining the military or for siding with the left when that's all they know.
Yeah.
That's all they know. It's not like it's older people who did grow up when they had adults who
knew
better.
That's right.
This is the third or fourth generation now. So the original people who remember what America was like before 1945 or before 1968, all those people are gone.
Yes.
And, you know, the people who are dominant now, a lot of the people who are running the show today, these older people, in their youth were the people in the anti-war rallies who were neo-Marxist, you know, Gramscian types and the, you know, Berkeley leading the marches. All of the left-wing radicals of the 60s, they're now all old people, and they've all, many of them, ascended to the highest elements or positions of American society. And they've been there for a while now. They're the elite. The revolutionaries have now become the traditionalists, the conservatives with the lowercase c, and now we right-wingers, the conservatives, capital C, are now suddenly the revolutionaries because we've been pushed to the periphery so long and so far. That now, as I said, we're living in a country where Seymour Hersh and Russell Brand are considered by the Democratic Party to be
right-wing
conspiracy.
And Alan Dershowitz.
Well, excuse me. Sorry. Heck, Donald Trump. Donald Trump was a Democrat most of his life.
Yeah.
Donald Trump was a card-carrying member of the DNC. I remember in 2006.
He got civil rights awards, I remember. And
that's
then he became an anti-Semite racist. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so it shows you how, I mean, they talk about how far the Republicans have gone. I would argue the Democrats have gone farther.
I don't think we've gone that far. I really don't think we've gone that far.
No, if anything, I think we've moderated.
If anything, maybe. Yeah, that's actually an interesting point. Let me Let me talk to you about this photograph when we come back. Vladimir Putin and President Xi Jinping. Yeah. Let me talk to you about that when we come right back. Brandon Weikert is our guest. He and I will be right back. Brandon J. Weikert is our guest, author of many books, including Winning Space, How America Remains a Superpower, The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy, and Biohacked, China's Race to Control Life. Let's talk about one of those countries anyway. Here's a headline in the New York Times, Brandon. China as peacemaker in the Ukraine war, question mark. I don't know about the United States' relevance anymore, but I'll tell you something. It seems by the day we're becoming less and less relevant, and that seems to me to make for a more and more dangerous world. But I'll let you take it any way you want.
Yeah, the United States is no longer the superpower. I mean, I wrote my first book was about how we remain a superpower, and it came out 3 years ago, and it might as well have been 300 years ago, because the days that we are now in a post-unipolar world order, and China is the ascendant power, and the United States and Russia are the two declining powers. And if we don't get the right person in power in 2024, our decline will be terminal as much as Russia's is. Now, the difference is that Russia is clearly, under Putin, making a strategic conclusion that they, if you can't beat them, join them. So they you know, Russia, always we view them as this big, you know, power in the world, always the great villain, with all these nukes, and they're always going to do their own thing. They're unpredictable, but they recognize Putin's regime, his Siloviki, recognize that there's no possible way for the United States, for the Russian Federation to stand up on its own anymore. So they're swinging to their east. We keep talking about our pivot to Asia here in the United States. Well, they're pivoting to Asia too, and their pivot's a lot better than ours. Only instead of rising to challenge China as a competitor, they're basically under Putin, becoming a subordinate or vassal state to China. And Putin's fine with that, so long as China protects him from the West and so long as China lets him be the big dog in Russia, he's fine with that. What we witnessed today, this meeting between President Xi and Putin, is the birth of a new world order, a Chinese-led world order, a Eurasia that is dominated by China. Eurasia, of course, Europe and Asia, is the largest landmass in the world. It has the most amount of natural resources, the most amount of potable water. It is the breadbasket in many respects of the world. And China and Russia are now congealing into an anti-American autocratic alliance that now I don't think can be broken. Trump was trying to break it up by getting Russia to side with us, and he probably could have had he gotten a second term. He's the only one that could have. And those days are done. So now we are outmatched, outmanned, and outgunned. And we're going to watch over the next decade China devour the world, starting with Russia. And Russia will do it happily because they just want to get Ukraine crushed. And they want to be seen as standing up successfully to the West, which they somewhat not incorrectly view as encroaching with NATO on their border to try to break them up.
One of the interesting things I have found is if you talk to younger people, younger leftists particularly, but younger people generally, and you see this even in some cases on the right, there seems to be a general blasé attitude about what you just said. There seems to be a kind of shrugging of the shoulders that the next decade or the next two decades or the next century or the next five centuries will be Chinese centuries. They just seem not to care that much.
Yeah.
Say goodbye to a lot of good things if that is the case. This will be why we will no longer ever be able to have nice things, including human rights. Including human rights.
Yeah. Well, just remember, I'm not saying this hyperbolically. I mean this very seriously and sincerely. Today, of course, is the 20th anniversary of America's greatest strategic blunder, probably in the last century, the Iraq War.
Right.
Most of the same people who manipulated the situation at the time, using 9/11 as a shield to shield them from criticism about pushing us into Iraq, many of those people are in power today, the so-called neoconservatives. I like to call them democratic globalists because you've got neocons in both parties. Those democratic globalists have never been punished, never been brought to task legally or politically, really, because they're still in power, for the mistakes, either for missing 9/11, which many of them were in intelligence positions and they ignored the 9/11 warnings, or for getting us into Iraq on idiotic pretenses. Those people are now running, many cases, Biden's foreign policy with Ukraine and Russia. They are the same people now laughing and mocking this new relationship, this increased intensive relationship between China and Russia. So they're literally dumb. And you are being led right now, this country is, at least our foreign policy, I would argue most of our policy, is being led by literal idiots. And like the Bourbons of old, they've learned nothing and forgotten nothing. Because they get to get paid and live a great life and have all the cushy parties and all the cushy homes in Northern Virginia and Washington, D.C. and travel the world. So they never get punished. It's the ordinary American who gets punished. It's the ordinary American who's going to have to deal with the fact that we're no longer the top country in the world, that our economy is no longer the top economy in the world, that we're no longer the smartest population in the world, and on it goes. And the fact that they're laughing about this in D.C. shows you how far gone they are. And then there's another component of this, and you can call this the Hunter Biden angle, where Hunter is just one example of many, where our elite have been for 40 years bought and paid for by the People's Republic of China. Yep. And so part of the reason they're ambivalent about this is because, hey, a Chinese-led world order actually benefits them financially in Washington, D.C. There's more trade deals. They get more power, they get more money, and then they can stay in power longer and have greater influence longer. And that's the way this works. And so we've basically been led by self-destructive idiots who are doing exactly what the name suggests. They're destroying ourselves and basically making suddenly China appear like they're the stabilizing force. They just made peace in the Middle East, supposedly, and now they're trying to make peace with Ukraine. I don't know if they're going to be able to, but certainly with China backing Russia's play increasingly over the next year or so, Russia militarily is going to become very much more capable and effective, I think. And certainly their economy will not collapse the way that Yale and Summers and some of these other top-notch economists in the West are saying it will. Basically, the sanctions will be toothless that we're putting on them because China and then India and many other developing countries will backstop Russia for the cheap energy. Meanwhile, Europe suffers. They get mad at us. They possibly lose Ukraine. And after that, NATO breaks apart. NATO's a non-entity anymore because if Ukraine collapses, we've committed so much power and legitimacy and money and weapons there. If Ukraine does ultimately collapse in the next 6 months, as I think it will, that's it for the American-led European.
We did all of this.
China.
We did all of this.
We did it all.
We ushered
China
in.
China did nothing.
Yeah,
China
no, I, yeah. They China was China, and the United States stopped being the United States. Brandon, I got to wrap it there, my friend.
Yeah.
Until next week, God bless you, sir. Thank you, as always.
You.
I am Seth Leibson. I'll be back with a final thought. Folks, how do you think the Biden administration is handling the economy? We've got banks failing, stock market volatility, a possible recession coming. What if you could invest in a portfolio with a high fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market or the Fed? A portfolio where you'll know what each monthly statement will look like with no surprises. You can turn your monthly income on or off, compound it whatever you like, and there's no loss of principal if you need your money back at any time. Your interest is compounded daily. You are paid monthly. And there are no fees. It's a secure, collateralized portfolio that delivers a high fixed interest rate. Talk to my friends at YRefi. They're local. You can visit with them. I know them well. They're trustworthy and honest, and you won't get a sales pitch. They leave that up to me and Larry Elder. YRefi is a due diligence approved firm. You can earn up to 10.25% rate of return. That's right, a 10.25% fixed rate of return. Just log on to investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or give them a call at 888-YREFI34. That's investyrefi.com, or give them a call at 888-YREFI34. Brandon is not always the most optimistic, obviously, but you look at the times and you don't have a lot of reason to be optimistic about what we have ceded to the stronger powers of this earth, namely Russia and China. Dennis Prager earlier today was talking about,
can't be the police. Someone said we can't be the policemen of the world. And Dennis Prager's point was, you know, there are different kinds of police. Sometimes you walk the beat, but sometimes you engage and have to be active. But if we're not walking the beat, someone else will be. The question is, who do you want the policemen of the world to be? You want it to be China? Talk to your friends in Tibet. Talk to the people trying to practice Christianity there. Talk to the Uyghurs. You want it to be Russia? Talk to anyone who has lived under the thumbscrew of Vladimir Putin. Or you want it to be the United States. Those are your three choices. It would be nice if the leadership of this country got that answer right, because they seem to have really failed the Lincoln test that if destruction be our lot, we ourselves will be its author and finisher. And we have been authoring and finishing an awful lot of self-destruction here. Not the most upbeat of notes. The good part of it is we can turn it around. And it takes leadership. People who think leadership doesn't matter, it matters. Until tomorrow, God bless you all. I am Seth Leibson. Class is dismissed.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.